Here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and my name's Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. All you have to do is give us a call. It's a car show. This is where we talk about your car. I settle disagreements between husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends and what's the best oil and all that other kind of jazz. But we're also here to tell you about some good shops in Phoenix, and these are guys that I know and I've known for years and years. I've been in the Valley. I was born and raised in Arizona. Been in the Valley. I think we moved here from southern Arizona to the Valley in 1968. And then I've been in the car repair business since 1968 because I worked at a gas station and I fixed tires and did oil changes. So, been around a long time. But one of the guys I want to tell you about real quick is Action Auto. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a good guy. He's honest. He's dependable. You don't need to worry about his technicians taking advantage of you. You don't have to worry about somebody telling you that you need something that you really don't. So, if you're in that area of I-17 in Deer Valley, he's on the northwest corner. And whatever you may need, it's worth a call. All of us that are associated with the show are real good at saying we're not the best guy to put a convertible top on your VW bug, but here's a couple of people that probably could help you. That's what it's all about, is just kind of sharing. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you're listening on iHeartRadio, you can use the 602 number, or you can use 888-960-9696. I'll do that again. 888-960-9696. And it sounds like that I'm kind of frazzled. I am. We're north of Phoenix about 100 miles. And I know Phoenix right now is the temperature's about 73. Just 100 miles north, a little bit in the mountains, we're at 57. But I've got a couple of pieces of equipment that haven't run for the winter, and I'm getting ready to get them started. I've got a boom lift and a tractor and an excavator I've got to get running. So I'm doing a little ether stuff. I'm doing battery charging. I'm, you know, checking the oil and fresh fuel and all kinds of stuff, and I've been doing that all morning long. And I'm thinking to myself, I better put two new batteries in the boom lift. So I call around to find out the battery prices. I'm quite surprised at a battery that's $200 to $300. And they're called Group 27 batteries, so they're kind of a big battery. And these are both diesel. All the applications are diesel, and diesel takes a little bit more electricity to get it fired up. And so I'm just kind of surprised I haven't. But my wife reminded me that both of the batteries that we have, two of the batteries that we have in the boom lift, are dated 2011. So I did get my money out of them, but I have been charging them. Anyway, when you have a car problem or a car issue, may I suggest the easiest way to kind of bond with the shop is write it down. Tell us what kind of car, year, make, and model car you have. When you bring it in for your appointment or you're going to drop it off for the day, if you put something in writing, we just really embrace that. We won't forget. We're going to do exactly what you say. You're going to give us symptoms that are going to save you money. So when the car dies, it dies and then it restarts almost immediately. You have no idea how important that is, as opposed to the engine dies and I pull off the side of the road and I can crank it for the next 2 weeks and it won't start. Those are so important. Those details are so important to help us go on the right road. So if you're driving down the road, and Mark, it seems to be when I'm going on highway speeds and it's in the summertime and summertime's right around the corner and the air conditioning's on and I get up to like 65 and I'm fine, but I get up close to 70 and it falls on its face, it dies, it pulls off the side of the road, and it takes me forever to start it up. It's a fuel pump. That's all there is to it. It's a fuel pump. The biggest demand in Phoenix is summer, air conditioning, hotter than hell. Yeah, we're done. On the other hand, you pull off the side, you're driving down the road, the engine dies, and Mark, I just throw it in neutral and start it right back up. Okay, well, that's not a fuel pump, because it wouldn't do that. That's some kind of ignition problem. That's an EGR valve that's hanging open. There's lots of other things, but if you can just give us that kind of information, it saves you money. And don't be afraid to type too much. It doesn't make any difference. We'll scratch out what really, well, my wife bakes a good, really good chocolate cake. We'll just scratch it out because it's not important to us. Unless, of course, there's a cake in the car. And then we might have to indulge ourselves. Nevertheless, car repair is easy if you understand the fundamentals. And if you understand the relationships. A line in a car, I'll give you a good example of technology. A line in a car is getting the two front tires to go straight ahead. And the top of the tire should not lean inward or outward. It should stand straight up and down for the very best tire wear. However, when you turn a car right and left, the front tire no longer is vertical perfect. It leans to the right on a right turn, and it leans to the left on a left turn. So now we're going to start wearing the outside edges of the front tires when we turn. So you have to know all of this. You have to understand the dynamics of the alignment and what the tire is telling you. It's not uncommon at my shop for us to come to work and have a car in for an alignment, and the back tires are nice and square. Otherwise, the sidewall is vertical and the tread is horizontal. Beautiful tread wear. The fronts are rounded. There's no defined angle between each side of the tread. It's not square, and the sidewalls are square. It's because they've never been rotated. And we should rotate your tires every other oil change. But these tires, the front ones have been on the front way too long, and the back ones have been on the back way too long. So we just swap them. We take the back, put them on the front, take the front, put them on the back. We're done. Now, you're going to wear the edges on the front tires, but the back tires that have excessive edge wear, they're not going to get any worse because they're on the back of the car. They're going to just follow the fronts. So the back tires don't turn. The front ones do. That's kind of how it works. There's lots of guys in the valley that are ASE Master Certified Technicians, guys that own repair shops, and you can go to my website, marksalem.com, and find my complete list of guys that do good work. I've almost got every area of the valley covered. There's some I don't, and there's some I can't. I just can't find a shop that my investigation of looking at them on social media, looking at their reviews, how long they've been in business, how many owners have they had, are their technicians ASE certified, do the complaints really amount to anything? Because, well, he was over his estimate. Gosh, I'd just like to know how much. You know, if he's over $4 on a $400 estimate, most of us will just wipe the $4 off. But if he's over $4, I'm not quite sure that's a violation I'm going to be concerned about. On the other hand, if it's a $400 estimate, then when you get there, it's $612. Then you have a concern, and it's a valid one. We're supposed to be better than that. And in order for us to diagnose the car and give you an estimate, we have to know the parts and the labor costs. And we all know that sales tax is sales tax and environmental charges and sales tax adds up to somewhere in the vicinity of 10 to 15%. So we're done. It's easy. So 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or problem, 602-508-0960. One of the things that also makes a difference when we're dealing with consumers at the front counter is we'd really like to talk to the consumer that drives the car. Now, husbands will bring in their wife's car, and it's clear they've not driven the car and they've not experienced the problem. So a lot of times the senior people at many car repair facilities, whether it's a dealer, an independent, a chain store, or whatever, it's a mobile guy, will usually ask for a phone number to talk to the person who predominantly drives the car. That's in your best interest so that we can get, you know, the meat and potatoes right from the person that drives the car, right from the person who's identified the issue. And then we come down to those ones that you can't duplicate. So you're driving down the road and intermittently the air conditioning goes off and it'll come back on anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes later. The real question is it still blowing air out the vents? And are you saying that the air conditioning goes dead because the air goes from warm to cold? Or cold to warm. But that kind of back and forth at the front counter is really important. There are times, especially guys, they'll walk in and dance their keys across the counter and say, air conditioning's not working, and they walk out the door. Gosh, I'd sure like to ask him, Does it ever blow cold in the mornings, in the afternoon? Does it stink? Does it smell? When it blows cold, does it just blow cold for a long period of time, or does it go on and off, on and off, on and off? Because you're going to save a lot of money in the diagnostic process if we can just get the answers to those questions. For instance, every time I get on the freeway, the air conditioning, stops blowing cold. Okay, where are your settings? Well, I put it on low speed and I put it on max. Okay. And I go look at the car and I can tell that, yes, the low speed means the fan motor is blowing over the ice cube like this. So what's happening is the person's driving down the freeway. They have their fan speed on the very lowest position. They have it on maximum, which is recirculatory. And we're freezing up the unit. That's what's happening. And so either go to normal and drop a window down or move that fan speed up a little bit so we stop freezing up the air conditioning system. So we'll spend a half a day trying to duplicate the problem and not be able to duplicate the problem. And then sooner or later down the road somewhere, we'll go, oh, well, wait a minute. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to normal. I want you to go to speed 3. And if you're too cold, roll the window down. But I want you to keep it on fan speed 3 in normal. Or fan speed 2 and normal. And tell me, does it work? Yes, Mark, it works. Okay, well, you're freezing the unit up. So we just have to redirect you and retrain you on the right way to turn your air conditioning controls on and off. That's kind of how it is. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. My name is Mark Salem. We're here at KKNT Phoenix, but we're also on iHeartRadio, and we'll be back talking cars in just a minute. Well, 20 minutes after 10 o'clock, and let me tell you about a transmission shop that is run by Fred Flintstone himself. And then Bill Gates works there as well. Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around transmissions since we used to shift them with cables and engine vacuum and throttle and manually shift them. I mean, he's been there. Now, today, computers do everything, and Phil can work on those too, because here's the deal. Fundamentals haven't changed. We still know we need to shift from 1 to 2, and we're going to need electricity, or we're going to need vacuum, or we're going to need transmission fluid pressure to do it. So all we're going to do it electronically as opposed to watching where your foot's at. So Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, been around a long time, 40th Street in Washington, a great transmission shop. If you want somebody to drive it, he'll do it. If you've got a leak, he'll take care of that. He's a good guy. Phil, 40th Street in Washington. Let's go to the phones. Terry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. It's me again.
Okay.
I have a 2002 PT Cruiser. And the panel lights, tach, the speedometer, and so on, go dark at night. You can't get any lights on them unless you turn on the overhead. And then those lights come on.
Okay. Okay. There is a, on your headlight switch, there's going to be a dash dimmer and bright lever switch or something, depending on the car. Are you familiar how to make the dash lights get brighter and dimmer?
Yes.
Okay. And when that's called a rheostat, and when you roll that knob, it doesn't do anything.
No, not until you get to the point where your overhead comes on, and then they come on.
Perfect answer. That's a perfect answer. I understand exactly where you were going with that. So thank you. That's really good. I would assume that we'd have to go in and look at the headlight switch. It would seem to me that that would be the first place that you'd want to start. You'd want to just remove the headlight switch, pull it through the dash, unplug it.
Headlight switch. Hold on.
No. No, we're not going to turn it on now. We're not going to turn it on now.
Okay.
Okay. I'm saying that the technician would probably first check the fuse for the dash lights, and then after that, he'd probably
hoping for it's a fuse.
What's that?
I was hoping it was a fuse.
Okay. Well, that's where we check first, And then okay. the second thing we would do is we would take out the headlight switch and look at it and look at the rheostat. And most of us can look at it and see if the rheostat's good or not. We might even plug in another headlight switch. Does it work fine? Yep, it does. Boop, boop, we're done. So I don't uh-huh. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in Sun City.
Okay. You could go to Auto Dynamics up there on Grand Avenue and 107, I think. Let me look and see real quick here. But, yeah, Grand Avenue, let me see. Hold on. 99th Avenue. I would just simply insist that you show them what's going on and then drop the car off and ask them what their checkout charge is. That's all you have to do. They might fix this for the checkout charge. They could fix this for the checkout charge, but don't count on that. I'm just saying that's the very best you could hope for.
What should that run roughly?
The checkout charge should probably, you know, that's, I want to tell you, there's no such thing as roughly in our industry. You're going to see $49, $50 on the low side, and you're going to see $120 on the high side to check out your problem. What we hope is that the technician will appropriately bill it. So if it took him 15 minutes, he's billing for 15 minutes, and he's not going to take the hour .2, which is the high end of the scope. So that's what you're hoping for. I think you'll be happy with Auto Dynamics.
Okay.
All righty.
Good. Thank you, Mark.
All right. You betcha, ma'am. Thank you. And let's go to Daniel. Daniel, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Good to hear you. Hey, I've got I called you a long time ago about engine oils for older Chevy motors, like 70s vintage. I've always used a straight weight, 30 weight in it. And I guess my question is, that's getting hard to come by, but what about, can you use like the Rotilla diesel motor oil? Go ahead.
It's okay. Rotilla is a diesel motor oil, just like Chevron has a diesel and Valvoline has a diesel and Union 76 has a diesel. Everybody has a diesel and that gas. So you're going to stick with the gas motor oil. If you've got a 30 weight oil, let me explain. A 30 weight oil is a good oil, and it's no different than the 30 weight oil we have today, except the 30 day oil today is 10 times better than the one you have in a can that was made in the 60s or the 70s. This oil is backward compatible. So if you wanted to use a multigrade oil, then I would tell you to go to a 1030. It flows like a 10 weight when the car is cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when the car is hot. And I think that's what you really want, is you want a thin oil to get it running, and then you want the oil to flow like a thicker oil when it's warmed up good. So if I were you, I'd go down to Walmart and buy the cheapest. You know, you can buy 30 weight oil at Walmart. Just buy the cheapest stuff they got, because it's all okay. It's all okay. Yeah. That car's not going to love you more, and it's not going to say, you know what, Daniel, if you put cheap oil in me, I'm only going to last another 93 days. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So it's all backward compatible. So the 30 weight today is very much like the very best oil we've got, but it's a whole lot better than the 30 weight of 1968.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because the motors, it's original. It hadn't been gone through, and it's got a little tobacco smoking problem slightly, but that's what I want to stick with.
Does it smoke when you first start it up, or after you get on it a little bit?
No, just when I start it up for about 5-10 minutes, and then it clears up.
Okay. That could very well be valve guide seals.
Yeah.
That would be easy to diagnose, and it's not too hard to repair. But you could do valve guide seals on that. But if that were the case and you wanted to try something different, I'm going to change. Instead of the 1030, I'm going to say either go with the 30 weight or a 40 weight and see if the 40 weight, after a couple of months, reduces the amount of smoke on startup.
Okay.
That's it. So go, you go to a 30 or a 40, and you're just looking to help control a little bit of oil leaking into the cylinder, which isn't going to hurt anything. The worst that's going to happen is going to foul a spark plug. Have you had a fouled spark plug in this yet?
No.
Okay, well then you're, you're on a 1 to 10 scale, you're on a 2, and you aren't on an 8. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
So what's in diesel motor oil that wouldn't be compatible with the gas engine?
Well, it's just a completely different level of oil. In the old farm, us old farm guys, we don't really care what we put in our diesels. Today we're using a 0-20, and in before we all used a 40 and a 50. And now we're putting water in diesels of today, an oil with the consistency of water in diesels today. The diesel has a lot more soot than the gasoline motors do. So we're going to have a high detergent motor oil where we keep the detergent in suspension to run it through the filter. But if you want to use a diesel fuel or oil, you can. If you've got an extra case there and you say, I want to use it up, if it's a 1030 or a 1040, you can go ahead and use that in your car. But I got to run. But thank you, Daniel. Good luck to you, buddy. Thank you. Our lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why your car should run at a half on the temperature gauge to three-quarter. It should always run at the best you can from half to three-quarter. And I know many of you are just saying to yourself, Mark's lost his mind. Many of you believe that the gauge should be at a quarter all the time, and nothing could be further from the truth. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to be here till noon talking about car repair questions, gasoline, diesel oils, and windshield wiper blades, whatever you want. The lines are wide open. One's gone. Brian's got it, but we've got four more, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And give us a call. Gil's going to ask you what your name is, and he's going to put you in queue, and then he's going to whisper in my ear that Lily wants to talk to you or Fred or whatever, and that's how it works. Brian, let's start with you. How can I help you?
All right, I've got a suspension issue on a 2013 Suburban. And when I am... I've got the front-end alignment set a couple times. I've had the tie rod arms replaced. But when I'm going at a sharp turn, low speed, if you're not looking, you think I'm peeling out. This thing just squealing all over the place. The tires seem to be chirping. Like, it seems like an alignment issue, but the alignments keep coming out perfect.
Are you sure it's coming from the front?
Yes. I can feel them chirping. I feel the car jerking around when I'm making the turn.
Okay. I've never had this question.
It's a two-wheel drive, so it's a rear-wheel drive. But the front end, every once in a while, just keeps... every time I'm making a sharp turn, it'll start to make a weird chirping sound from the wheels, from the tires rubbing against the pavement.
I've never heard this before. I mean, this is clearly one of those that somebody has to drive.
Okay.
But Brian, I hear, oh yeah, I've had it to the alignment shops all over. I'm not saying you're not. I'm not trying to dissuade people in believing you. I don't know the quality of the alignment shops. I don't know what equipment they have. I don't know the age of the person that's doing the job and how many gray hairs he has, or even if he has any hair. So those are all the things, but something is wrong. I don't care what the alignment says, or you're misrepresenting the noise, and you say it's coming from the tire, and it could come from a belt, it could come from a power steering, it could come from the steering box. So, you know, and how many shops have you demonstrated this to? Take me for a ride, and I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. Have you ever done that?
Yeah,
and so those guys, you took them for a ride, you showed them how to make the noise, you showed them and let them listen to it, and they couldn't fix it.
Right. They say, see, here's your readout on your alignment.
Okay, well, that's...
But we've adjusted it and everything's good.
Okay, well, you're... Can you see the difference between the shop I'm trying to describe to you and the shop you're going to?
Oh, yeah. Yep, okay. I'm a Central Phoenix. You got any recommendations?
Well, yeah, 25th Street Auto.
25th Street Auto.
Martin's Auto. They're all Central Phoenix. 25th Street Auto is 25th and Indian School. 16th Street and Thomas is Martin's Auto Repair. Those guys got more years of experience working on cars than half the guys that own shops in this town. Both of them could drive the car with you and tell you what's the matter with it. So, or Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School. You can go to Harker's.
Okay.
So Harker's, I'm going to give you Harker's, I'm going to give you Martin's, and I'm going to give you 25th Street Auto Billy. And all three of those guys can find it.
Sweet.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. So when you have a vibration in your car, what's really important, and it will affect the checkout a lot, is if you can tell us that the vibration is shaking your hands in the steering wheel or your butt. That's all we need from you. And we need to know if the vibration is when you're throttling up, or you've released the throttle, or you're just maintaining speed. Where's the throttle? Is the throttle off? And the vibration's there? Is the throttle there only when I hit that port of the throttle where I'm not going to go any faster or any slower? And does it shake the steering wheel or the seat of my pants? Those are really important things. And if you walk into your shop and you say, I have a vibration. All right, well, give me your keys there. Here, let's fill out this work order. If he doesn't ask you any more information, Or how to duplicate it when I test drive your car, or have you got time right now? And I'll have one of my guys take a ride with you, and you can show them how to make it happen. You have no idea how much money you can save if you insist on that. Now, I recognize that the car dealers are really big, and they're not going to call a guy from the back. But you know what? The car dealers are only 1/4 of the market. They're not even 1/4 of the market. But you got car dealers, you got chain stores, you got independent shops, and you got specialty shops. The independent shops that have been out there that are being led by guys with gray hair like mine, and guys that are ASE certified like I am, and master certification, which is the highest level, we understand having you in front of us is an important part of the fix of this car. So, hey, I'm going to have Scott ride with you. Can you show him how to do it? Yes, I can. Good. Scott, come here. Wash your hands up good. Go with Mr. Salem, and he'll take you, and he's going to show you a vibration. That's how it's supposed to work. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We have four lines open. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. There's four lines. You can grab one. And then we're going to have Gil answer the phone, and he's going to say, hey, you want to talk to Mark? And you say yes, and he says, what's your name? And then he says, okay. And then he whispers in my ear that the next caller, in my case, is John. John, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, I have a couple of fluid questions for you.
Okay.
First off, working on a 2005 Toyota Sienna, and it had the pink fluid, Toyota fluid, in the coolant, and I had a bunch of Prestone green, and I was wondering if how big of a deal would be when I change it just to go with the Prestone all models, all colors, fluid, or does it make any difference?
There's going to be a little bit of an argument within the industry about that, but you did the last sentence said it all. If the manufacturer says that this mixes with all the other green and red and blue and stuff, then that means they've tested it. And if that's the case, then as long as you have to make sure that the gallon you're dealing with, is it half water already, or is it not half water and to be mixed 1 gallon of coolant to 1 gallon of water? Which do you have?
I always get the concentrate, so it's a little cheaper.
Okay, and I'm with you. I do the same thing. So, yeah, just mix it 50-50 because it's like epoxy. You got to mix it 50-50 for it to work. But as far as that's concerned, and you're also working on a car that's 15, 16, 17 years old. And so it's no real big deal. It's not going to really care. Most people, and there are some technicians, are going to say that I'm wrong about that, but the last sentence you said, you were evidently reading off of the carton and the container,
and if
the manufacturer says this. Now, if Mrs. Jones came in, and Mrs. Jones was a customer, and maybe even a neighbor or a friend of my mother's, and she instructed me to do that, I'd probably question her. And if she didn't have your answer, then I'd tell her I probably would, but I wouldn't. I just put the same color back in there. But as far as color is concerned, the name on the gallon jug means nothing to me. I buy coolant by the pallet, and I usually buy the cheapest stuff I can find because pink is pink and green is green and blue is blue. And there's a lot of universals out there that are amber. And so we do a lot of amber. Because it's okay to put an amber in a Ford or a Chevy or a BMW and stuff like that.
Okay, then the next question on the trans, it's probably got an Asian transmission, 5-speed auto, and I was debating whether to put some Castrol Transmax in it, or can I put the Valvoline? They have a synthetic, and I was wondering, well, if I put the synthetic in, and it's an older vehicle, will it make it any chance of it slipping at all? Or do I want to go?
No. How many miles are on the car, first of all?
Like 180.
Okay. The synthetic has a higher burn. It turns to a tar at a much higher degree than anything else does, and it also flows out of the can at 20 below and 40 below and 60 below zero. So a synthetic has a wider range, a far wider range of protection. Second of all, a synthetic is, and I want you to just, this is for visualization. A quart of conventional oil has different molecules in it the size of basketballs to marbles. A synthetic, all the molecules are the same size, and it's a really, really good oil. And it has tremendous value to your engine. But you got 180,000, whatever you've been doing has been good because you've been around the world 4, 5, 6, 7 times. So you've driven the equator 7 times in that vehicle. So whatever you've been doing is good. Are you going to just drain it completely, or are you just going to add to it?
Well, this is for the trans. I'm just going to take out the 3 or 4 quarts and then put in, some other.
Okay. Okay.
So I was wondering about the synthetic, since it's slipperier.
No
chance of it.
No, that's not even true at all. Synthetics isn't slipperier. That's just not even true. That's a very, very common thing we hear. But again, the synthetic oil is far superior in hot and cold environments, and it's far superior with detergent capabilities, and it's far superior for lubricating. But far superior than what, Mark? Than conventional oils that we have today that are in Maseratis? And I go, yes, there's a slight difference between a synthetic and a regular oil or even a blended oil. But the difference is, in the scheme of things, is kind of small. Just kind of small. So don't get hung up on that synthetic stuff. But I will say that if you're going to do a flush, I'd go back with synthetics. In as far as the transmission is concerned, so if you're going to have somebody pull the pan and do the filter, and then you're going to have them flush it first and then pull the pan and do the filter and start with a brand new 6 or 8 quart system, you could put synthetic. Now, a lot of guys are going to argue with Mark and say, Mark, he's got 180,000 miles. That car's not going to last that much longer. Yeah, I know. Well, why are you putting a 50 or 100,000 mile transmission fluid in it when it ain't going to go that far? You're right. You're right. That's the kind of conversation that will happen in the background. Okay.
Okay. Then I had one other on a Ford Ranger 2002 5-speed, probably a Mazda. And every once in a while, it's really hard to get into first. And so I talked to the dealer, and they said, "We'll add a little friction modifier, and it should slip in." Then which one or what would you say to that?
Well,
you never know. And you come to a stop sign, and God, it won't go into first, right? And I have a little kit. I put a little kit in it that'll supposedly ship better, but, it still does it.
Well, I would want to drive it and see where the release point is on the shifter, on the clutch pedal. That's what I want to do. I need that clutch pedal has a throw of about 5-6 inches. And so I want to come off the floor an inch before the car starts moving. And when I push on the pedal and I'm doing 70 miles an hour and I'm going to push on the pedal and I'm going to throttle up kind of hard, I'm going to push the clutch pedal down and I want to go about an inch before it starts slipping. So I want the real meat and potatoes in the middle of the clutch pedal. And I'll bet you don't have that.
Oh, okay.
I don't think fluid's going to fix your problem. Let me just be real blunt. Fluid's not going to fix your problem. And that friction modifier came from somebody who heard that from his grandpa in the 20s. And it doesn't make sense to do that. But that's what I would do is I'd make sure that the clutch itself. And another thing, too, is do this. Before you go into first, go into second, and then go into first. If you say, Mark, that works.
Yeah, I've done some of that, too. Because what, the gears are just on top of each other or something?
No, it's the synchronizers. It's the synchronizers. Okay. You're pulling it into second, and you're slowing the synchronizers down or stopping them, and then you just goes right into first. Boom, we're done. So just pulling into another gear, first and second are on the same synchronizer, so pulling into second and then sliding into first, and if that works, then I just saved you $12 for friction modifier that wouldn't have worked either.
Okay. That sounds good. All right, appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, John. Thank you. That was it. John, that was really interesting because those are questions that I don't get on a regular basis. And so, and sometimes I get caught with my pants down and my brain is running at 100 miles an hour and my mouth doesn't catch up. But I think we came, and you came to the table with some really good questions too. Questions that are more technical based, and we have to focus on the technical aspect of it. I've been trained by Valvoline. I know how to make a quart of oil in a laboratory, and I know how to test a quart of oil, and I've also been trained by Chevron. And I have testified in courts, court of law, about oil and its expectations and what it can and can't do. And so I have been deemed an oil expert. I'm also a tire expert. I'm also an ASE Master Certified Technician, so I've passed all 8 automotive tests. I also own a very large repair facility, and I have 12 or 13 technicians, and I think of that, 75-80% of them are masters as well. And I've got a couple of techs, Adam and Eddie, that are probably a little smarter than I am when it comes to fixing cars. but it is interesting that you get all these different kind of opinions, but I'll just qualify right now and tell you I am an oil expert, I am a car repair expert, and I've been certified by lawyers, and they hire me to have me tell them that I would rather be on the other side of the issue. That works out. Who's in queue?
Say hello to Michael.
Michael, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Hey, I've got a 2002 Chevy HD 2500, and it's four-wheel drive, and what happens is the panel light comes on, the ABS and the emergency brake light comes on, and it seems like it does that when it heats up a little bit, like outside air.
Okay. I don't think I'm going to follow that with you, but let me ask you a question. What color? Let's start with one light. Is the ABS light yellow?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's just deal with that. Yellow means caution. Yellow means the ABS system's down. The question is why is it down? You just plug your scanner in it. You don't have one, and you're not going to get one at AutoZone either, but because they cost thousands of dollars. But we're going to plug in a scanner. We're going to take your car out, and we're going to do circles in the parking lot, and we might drive down the street or hop on the freeway or whatever, but probably one of the four sensors is not talking, or the computer has lost sight of that sensor. The second light, what color is it?
Red.
That's the one you better be working on. The red means uneven pressure front to rear. And it does. Now, is it the red light, brake light that comes on with the emergency brake, or is the red brake light when you turn the key on but you don't start the car?
Well, I start the car and there's no light on. And then it's perfect. Then I'll be cruising down the street and all of a sudden, they'll flip on.
Right.
I can clear them when I do the the accelerator thing with the key off and back on.
Okay.
They will clear.
Well, that's a whole different conversation, because the accelerator pedal, pumping the accelerator pedal in that kind of an environment doesn't tell the computer anything. It's the key cycle. It's called a key cycle. You went through a key cycle. You turned it off, and the computer looked at it and says, "Oh, I don't see it." And then you turn the key on, and it lights off because the computer, last time it gulped that, it took a gulp. It didn't see it. And so, but the red, your owner's manual tells you red means stop. And I would guess that your red light is going, you could have two different problems, but it is remotely possible that one repair will fix both. It's remotely possible, but usually not. So the parking brake, you can wiggle the lever when you're driving down the road and see if you can get the light to flash. And if it does flash and you go, "Hey, if I put my foot underneath it and pull it up, then the light doesn't come on." Well, adjust the button on the parking brake lever. But as far as
I've tried that and it doesn't work like that.
Okay.
And I just started it up and the ABS comes on, the brake comes on, and then they clear.
Wait a minute. That's a bulb check. That's all that is. There's nothing to be read into that. There's nothing to be read into that. It's just telling you the bulb works. It's programmed to do that.
I agree with that. Yes. But as I drive down the road, then they'll come on and stay on.
And that's what we're talking about. You've got one that's yellow, and you got one that's red. The red one's caution, and the yellow one is caution, and the red one says you shouldn't be driving it. So it's uneven pressure, the master cylinder's bypassing, you got a bad ABS, you got a dirty ABS, you got a wire that got caught in a tumbleweed and yanked off the ABS sensor.
I do a lot of four-wheel driving. So
it's your wife's fault anyway. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm with you. So but this isn't a tough one, but here's what's going to happen. Don't get into this idea you're going to go talk to some three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store and he's going to tell you from the front counter how to fix that, because I can't do that. I can't do that. But watch for this. I got to go, but watch for this. When you come to a stop, I want you to put a little extra pressure on that brake pedal and see if it fades and then stops. Or if it just fades and you think, "Gosh, I better let go. Oh, no, I'll stay with it. And then it becomes hard, or maybe there's a click. If that's the case, you need a master cylinder. So those are the symptoms that we would run your car through. And if you have a question, then hang on for a little while and call me back, and I'll tell you a couple of shops in your area that might be able to help you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We got five. You got a heck of a chance. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about it. Most of the shops that I tell you about are gray-haired guys like me, been around a long time, have sometimes a lot of grease under our fingernails, and we're the same guys that fix the elderly lady's lawnmower in our neighborhood, and we'd much rather talk about a lot of other things other than car and car repair stuff, but that's just the world we live in. So Blackwell Automotive fits that perfectly. 40th Street and Greenway. Tom is everything I just talked about. He's really good at what he does. He does vintage work as well as your brand new cars with 14 computers in them with climate control and blowing cotton cold air up your tail end during the daytime when you're driving around the city. All that kind of stuff is within his area of expertise. So that whole northeast quadrant of the city and the metropolitan Phoenix area is a difficult one, because there's lots of shops that come and go on a regular basis, and none of them really have the kind of 10, 15, 20 years that the rest of the shops that I want to talk about. So he's got that area covered, Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway, and let's zip on over to Eddie. Eddie, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
I have a 82 Chrysler 5th Avenue, 318 engine, and when I drive it, it runs, it starts up, it runs for a few hours, and then just stalls out. So I took it to the place where they told me last week, Sun City.
Okay.
Auto place. I went over there, the guy said, "I don't work on top of it."
Okay.
So I have carburetor on my car. He's worked most against on the newer cars.
Okay. Well, I think it's a mistake for you to diagnose it as a carburetor because your 318 has a distributor pickup assembly. It has an ignition module and it has a coil. It's got a lot of problems you got to be able to drive it and you got to be able to check it out before you can come to that conclusion. Cause I fixed a lot of cars who came in that wanted carburetor work with doing ignition work. And I remember a Ford not too long ago that we found this wire that somebody had left half disconnected at the coil. And even though the thing ran intermittently, it had died for no reason. And I saw that it had a new fuel pump on it. So I think I'd take it over to Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Harker's. And I would just describe to him what happens. And if you can actually make it happen, you could say to him, I take someone for a ride? I can make it happen. But
it's intermittent. Sometimes it'll run for a while, and then all of a sudden, like a few days, no problem. Then it just happens.
Okay, so when it dies, does it start back up?
Most of the time, yeah.
Okay, so most of the time is not good enough. So when it dies, do you have to crank it extensively for 15 or 20 seconds before it starts up?
Sometimes. Okay. It's like intermittent. Sometimes I slow out. I pull over to the curb and wait. Then I wait about maybe 10 seconds, 5 seconds. Then the key starts up. Sometimes I try to do it too quick. It won't stop.
Okay, Eddie, the reason why I ask you these questions is this. If it runs out of fuel and the carburetor's bad, you're going to have to crank the hell out of it to get it to start again. Every time. That's why I'm asking you these questions, okay? And so if it dies and stalls and every time you hit the key and it goes rrr, 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 then it ain't gas.
Yeah.
It isn't gas. This could be an EGR valve that's sticking open. This could easily be an EGR valve that's sticking open. So maybe Harker's will say, I'm going to pull the vacuum line off the EGR valve. I'm going to plug the vacuum line with a golf tee, and I'm going to have you drive it this way for another week or two. And then Eddie comes back and says, it never died once. Okay, well, then I'm going to replace your EGR valve. So I don't want you to go have the EGR valve replaced. I want you to have someone diagnose it. And I think Harker's is your best.
Where was that valve on the car?
It's on the intake manifold.
On the manifold.
Yeah. But you're going to, I'm not going to tell you anymore.
That car has one?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Intake manifold.
Yeah. So, but see here, if you pull it and you don't know what you're doing, you're going to cause a check engine light to come on, and then Eddie's going to have another problem that Mark just gave him. You have to know what you're doing when you're doing all of this. So I'm just giving you an example of, I'm quite sure that's one of the things that they're going to want to do is check the EGR valve and see if it's causing the problem. And us old gray-haired guys, we know what it looks like, we know what it smells like and stuff like that. So if we take the EGR valve off of your car and we find that it's just covered in carbon, just got carbon from one end to the other, then we're probably going to put a new one on there, and we're going to tell Eddie to hot rod the car a little bit more than just driving around like he's got his hot cup of coffee between his legs. So just you know, roughhouse the cars a little bit more, get a little bit more on the throttle, but I don't know if that's going to fix it. But just take it to Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'm quite sure that they can find the problem that's driving you crazy. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you very much. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I've got an 05 Isuzu Ascender. It's a rebadged Chevy Blazer.
Okay.
166,000 miles, and it won't automatic transmission, won't shift into third or fourth.
Ever. Right?
Right now it's ever, yes. Okay. Now, in fact, because it was a little progressive, was going into third. Now it won't go into third, and it just kind of flies into neutral at this point.
Well, 166,000 miles, you've been around the world, the equator, six times. I think that what I would do if I were working on it is I'd go drive it and I'd say to you, does it make any difference if it's hot or cold?
Yeah, it does not.
Okay. And then I'd probably pull the pan, and if I found half the transmission in the oil pan, and then I'd bid you a transmission. That's what I do.
Yeah, I did. I did drop the pan to replace some of the fluid and the filter.
Okay.
And it was dirty, but not particles. No.
I know, but see, you don't know what we know when we look at it. So now that you've done that, it's really us pulling the pan and looking at it is useless, because all we're going to see is since the last time you were in there. Next time, just take a picture of the pan. Take a picture of the metal in the bottom of the pan. Take a picture of those little mounds of black stuff. That means something to all of us. So we don't really want to have the pan full of fluid. We're going to take the pan off, dump the fluid out of it, and we want to see what's on the bottom of the pan.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
it was a little thick and dark.
Okay, well, but that doesn't even match your symptoms. I mean, thick and dark typically causes a lot of other problems. I would probably take it over to automatic transmission exchange. I would call in advance and say, can you drive? Can you take it ride with me in it? And can I leave it there? And you guys diagnose it and call me with an estimate. That's what I would do. So you're setting a stage for, I wanted to come over. I want to drive somebody to drive it so I can demonstrate the problem. I'm going to arrange transportation, leave it with you. You diagnose it and you call me and just say, what's your diagnostic fee? Give me the range it's going to be. And that's how I would handle it. At 166,000 miles, you can change the fluid. You can flush it. You can change the filter. You can go to YouTube and find all kinds of experts that will tell you how to spend money. But the fact of the matter is, it's got a lot of miles on it. And I think the worst case scenario is YouTube tells you to spend $1,000 to do this and do that, and at the end of the day, you still need a transmission. And so, you know.
Well, yeah, I think, what I've seen pretty much indicates that's a problem child transmission, and it's probably the clutch back. So,
well, I don't agree with either.
I just wanted to see what you had to say.
I don't agree with either one of those. I don't agree that it's a problem transmission. And I don't agree, if it is a clutch pack, it would be slipping and you wouldn't be able to move it. So
it wouldn't even do first or second then.
Yeah, you're using clutches to shift from first to second, second to third, third to fourth, and then overdrive and lock up. You're not even using a solenoid to lock the converter. So you're not using a clutch pack for that. So, but see, you pulled the pan, which means I can't look at the clutch material. So, you know.
I do have the fluid.
Okay.
I could take the bottle of fluid down there, dump it out, and they can sort through it. What do you think about that?
I think Phil would laugh at that if you did that. Mark Salem said to bring you a sample of the fluid and you could diagnose it. And he said you're going to touch your finger to it and taste it and be able to tell me exactly what's wrong with my Isuzu. I think Phil would probably pee his pants if he heard you say that. So.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Good luck to you. Thank you. And let's see. I can get Scott in. Scott, good morning. How can we help you?
How you doing?
Good. Good.
Okay, I have two questions. One, I have an 06 F-250 four-wheel drive crew cab long bed. Driving down the freeway, I go step on the brakes, and it wobbles pretty good. Actually, I'm looking for a
2 minutes
place that can align it and check and see what it needs underneath it. If I do get a clunk, if slow, if I turn downhill to the left, I'll get a little clunk. And it's got like 210,000 miles.
Gosh, today's the day for... Well, first of all, I disagree with your diagnosis. I think what you should do is that you should get somebody to drive a car and look, or you should drive at somebody and get it to wobble. Because all the things that you... That's not... First thing on my list is tie rod ends, center links, pitman arm, steering box. And I think if you can get it to wobble and somebody's standing outside off to the side, they're going to see those front tires going left and right.
Right.
And if that's the case, an alignment's not going to help you. Let's fix
I was thinking if I went into a front end.
1 minute.
I went to Firestone one day, but my truck's too long to fit on the rack.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah. And that is a problem. All of us old guys, we have rash for the big four-wheel drives and stuff like that. And besides that, we know how to line it on the ground anyway, so it doesn't really make any difference. What part of town do you live in?
Right, 51 and 101. 51 Union Hills.
Okay. Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway. He's up in that direction. Do you work anywhere else other than where you live? I mean, is there another location I can give you a repair shop?
No, I'm retired.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, I would call Blackwell's and say, I've got a wobble. And if it's the truth, I'm going to regurgitate this. I've got a wobble. When I apply the brakes, the steering wheel shakes left and right, and the whole truck shakes. And Mark Salem said you were really good with Ford four-wheel drives, and I'd like to bring it by and drop it off and have you guys – I'll take you for a ride and show it to you if you want, but I'll drop it off and have you guys call me with an estimate on the repair. But one of the things I want you to do, too, is when you're driving down the road, I want you to put your hands at 12 o'clock. And I want you to feel that wobble. And if your hand is wobbling with the wobble, then it's not. It's going to be something in the steering. It's going to be something in the steering. It could be suspension, but it's most likely in the steering, an idler arm, a tie rod, and something like that.
Yeah, I got underneath them. My tie rods, you know, I can move them.
Okay, well, I don't want to see you move them. That doesn't work for me. I want to know that the ball and the socket, and they move in complete synchronization or they don't. And you don't have to do – you get underneath there and you look, and I go, Tom, wiggle. And he goes, choo, 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 choo. And I look at it and go, the tie rod's bad. That's it. We're done. And you can see it because the tie rod, the cup, and the ball and socket and stud, they don't move in synchronization. So if they don't move in synchronization, it's worn out. But I got to run. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'll get it right. 11, 21, 52, 53, 54. Anyway. Oh, boy. We've had a lot of callers today. Gil, you had a caller and said remind you. What was that?
Yeah, that's right, Mark. We had a caller who he asked the question, is there a car repair shop in Goodyear for people who live in that area to go to? Do you recommend a good car shop?
I don't have one in Goodyear. I would love to have one in Goodyear, but I just don't have one in Goodyear. You got to come into town. The easiest thing to do is I have a map of all the shops that I can recommend. And here's why recommending a shop is important to you. Here's my promise to you. If something goes bad, then I get involved. And if the shop needs to make a refund or fix your car, then typically I can accomplish that. If the shop decides not to take care of the problem, then I kick the shop off the list and I'll fix your car up to $5,000, which covers the transmission. But I've never had to do that. And so, I mean, you can imagine that's why I'm looking hard. But if you go to MarkSalem.com, MarkSalem.com, Mark with a K and Salem like the cigarette, MarkSalem.com, you'll be able to find our list of best repair shops there. And there's some guys that on the west side, there's Harker's, there's Billy at 25th Street Auto, Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. But most of the time, home is great, but then if you have to drive a little ways for a good shop, it's usually pretty worth it. Anyway, do we have any callers?
Phone lines are open.
Phone lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a couple of other shops that are just great shops and have been on my list for 15 years maybe. Kurt's Auto Repair up at I-17 and Bell Road. He's been around the block. He knows what he's doing. He's as honest as the day is long. He's one of them old gray-haired guys. And all of us have taken the Automotive Service Excellence Test, ASE test, they call them, because that really qualifies you. And many of us are masters, which means you've passed all eight. So I can't enumerate all eight, but suspension, steering, transmission, heater and air conditioning, tires, brakes, engine, vehicle emissions, codes, dashboard. Those are the tests you take. And you basically it's a bumper-to-bumper test on a generic car that has all that stuff in it. Well, if you pass one, the brake test, then you are ASE certified in brakes. If you pass two or three, then you're ASE certified in A, B, and C. But when you're a master technician, you've passed all eight tests. And folks, it takes the better part of a day to pass all eight tests. So I've been a master since 1991 and I'm still a master, and I have, I think, 11 that work for me. But this isn't about my shop. This is about you and your shop. And that's where I'm happy to help you. So Kurtz is a good guy, and I can tell you how I met Kurtz. I sent a lady to Kurtz who had been told by three shops she needed an engine. Kurtz called me and he said, I fixed the car for $40. And I said, you did? I said, that's a cheap engine. He goes, no, I put an oil pressure switch in it. Everybody looked at the oil gauge, and the oil gauge was in the red, and they said, you need a motor. He says, the sending unit on the motor was bad. I said, well, how did she take that? And she said, I don't think she believed me, but I told her two things. Number one, it's not going to make noise. Number two, the light's going to go out. And so then I guess later, some period of time later, she stopped by Kurtz and said, no question, you fixed it. And that's how he became a part of it. But I have his cell phone number. I know he's a good guy, and I know he knows the difference between right and wrong. And I heard the bell. Who's on the phone?
Mark, say hello to Mark.
Mark to Mark. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, good.
I just wanted to call and just thank you so much for your shop and for the radio program that you do. I've been bringing my cars to your shop for about 4 years now, and I just had my Ranger in this week for some AC work, and Eddie checked some other things and found a couple of serious problems that would eventually show up that I wasn't aware of, and he did a great job fixing it, and I'm just so grateful to know that I can take my car to a shop and people are just totally honest about the repair that's needed, and they've done a great job for me for several years now.
So let me ask you a couple questions, because this is Dad talking, because my daughter Andy and my son Alan run that operation, and my wife and I are there a lot. But have they ever come a penny over their estimate?
No, in fact, my estimate for my Ranger this past week was, it was a significant amount of money, but I needed to have the repairs done. And when they told me how much it would cost, I said, go ahead and do it. And then when they called me with a final bill, my final bill was $100 less than they predicted.
Okay, well.
And I think every time that I've gone there, it's always been less than what they've told me.
We have to bid the big one. So if this part A and B and C are iffies, they're in the estimate. We're not going to call back.
Yeah.
I hate that when we have to call back and say, oh, you know what, I really need to do the control arms on the other side. I hate that. So I'm very proud when I hear what you said, because we always come in under our estimate, because we're smart enough to know that there's some iffies in there, and we better cover the iffies. So, and
right.
I have a great staff. I have Eddie Caruso, been with me 32 years. Adam, I went to high school with his dad. Adam's a master. We got Ron that's the master. Nate's a master. I'm just kind of going by bay. But thank you for saying what you said. This isn't about, the radio show isn't really about my shop, but thank you for that. And I'm going to pass this on to the kids. And I just you made my day, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. I just want to thank you. And I've talked to Andy a number of times, and I know quite a bit about cars. My dad was a mechanic, but she knows a lot more than I do. And it's just, she's just, I just trust her. She knows a lot. So you can thank her too.
Let me tell you something. You know that she's the CEO and CFO, right?
Yes, I do.
They answered her. And I had a technician one time say that to me. I worked here about 4 months, and he says, and you know, usually when there's a, usually he says,
one
minute. I don't know if I agree with that. Usually if there's a lady involved, the technicians can, you know, throw her, cover with bull crap and throw stuff at her. And yeah, he goes, but you can't do that to Andy. Andy was sweeping cigarette butts when she was 10 years old at our gas station in Ahwatukee. Andy grew up in that environment. Andy is, and her older brother Alan is there, and he runs the shop. And between the two of them, they do a great, great job. Alan is just this giant of a man, and he does the performance stuff. So the hot rod diesels and the hot rod cars and lifts and lowers and tires and wheels and exhaust and blah, blah, blah. He does that. But Andy, you made me a proud father. She's a wonderful human being, and she knows right from wrong, and I love that little girl with all my heart, and I know that she represents our family quite well. So thank you very much for that. I gotta run for a couple of reasons, but first of all, it's time for a break. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I want to talk to you about a shop that I really respect, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. He's been in the business for a very long time. Nate is a great guy to shake his hand and talk diesels with. But when it comes to Chevy diesels, Ford diesels, Dodge diesels, and some import diesels, he's really the king. He knows diesels better than anybody else I know, and he knows diesels a whole lot better than I do. So if you're looking for that diesel guy, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs, open Monday through Friday. They sell lots of parts and stuff and enhancement accessories on their website. And they're up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. One before I take Chuck, Mark had called up and paid lots of compliments about our shop. And I've said a thousand times before, I've been doing radio since 1988. And so this isn't about my shop. We've been blessed with really good customers, really good business, really good vendors, really good people and all that stuff. But when he talks about Andy, my daughter, leaving $100 on the table because we bid it for this, but then we didn't use all the stuff we thought we needed and we left $100 on the table. I copied that from somebody else. We don't do that on purpose. But the fact of the matter is when somebody does that, and I remember distinctly that seeing that happen at a gas station that I used to work at when I was a kid. It just oozes the confidence that, you know, they could have moved it right up to the, tucked it in underneath the estimate they gave you and pocketed that $100. It's really easy to make money in the car repair industry, and it's easy to be successful. You just have to be honest. You have to just give it back when you need to. And I would never be the one to say that we didn't do something wrong. I've bought engines before because my technicians made a mistake. I've bought wrecked cars before because we wrecked it on a test drive. We've done all that, but we've been in business since 1979. So yeah, for 42, 43, 44 years, however much it is, yeah, we've made a lot of mistakes, but we've learned a lot too. Chuck, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Hey, Mark. I've got an 07 Chevy Silverado. And on the driver's door, sometimes when I open it, the dome light comes on. Sometimes it doesn't. I don't see any switch or anything that the door opens and closes, and just wonder where I need to check to figure out why it's working only part-time.
Wow. Huh. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I'm surprised it doesn't have a switch somewhere in the door. The only place that it would know, and something where electrical is already at, is the latch. So it could be a latching issue. It could be a latch. But I'll tell you what I would do if I were you. I'd get on the internet and I'd punch in your VIN number and I would do driver's dome light switch or driver's door dome light switch. I think you're going to get an exploded drawing, and it's going to give you a part number based on the VIN, and I think it's going to show you the location of it. And I think that's what I would do if I were you. And you can do that with okay. O'Reilly's, AutoZone, Napa. And I'll tell you where I would go. I'll tell you where I go. Go to parts. The name of the company is Parts Authority, but Rock Auto. Go to Rock Auto. They have really good illustrations there, and that's what I wanted to say. Go to Rock Auto. But I don't know the answer of the location, but if you can't find it, I'm going to assume it's not on the door frame. It's probably going to be in the latch.
Okay. Yeah, I'm used to seeing, in the older cars, they had a little thing on the wall where the hinges are, and it's opened, you know, closed it, but
right.
I checked everywhere, didn't it? But I'll do that. I'll go on that site and see what they say.
Yeah, just look for a door switch and then dome light. Those are your search word kind of things. And if you wouldn't mind, Mark at MarkSalem.com, you can send me an email and tell me. You can help me look smarter the next time somebody asks me this. Thank you very much, Chuck. Thank you. When you I'm trying to do, I do my best to make sure that geographically I've got areas of the valley covered with really good shops, but it's just impossible. The far southeast valley, it's really a beautiful place. I live out that way.
1 minute.
But the idea is that when there's lots of shops, but there's lots of shops that come and go. A guy will open a shop and he'll drive the sales way up, and then he'll sell it to somebody else who found out that if I continue those kind of sales, I'm going to have to really sell a lot of stuff, and then I have to pay him for the business, and I have to pay for the rent of the building, and I have to pay the staff, and it's just a big, gosh darn it, it's just, and I'm not saying that happens in the Southeast Valley, I'm just saying that's just an area of growth. And when you have that, you don't have anybody that's been out there for 10 years that's been working on cars, 20 years that's been working on cars, the same family, the same people. And you know, they obviously know how to fix cars because they wouldn't be in business this long. Or you run into a chain store, but then you might run into a shop that has changed hands 5 times. And that's also troublesome. But anyway, in Mesa, I've only got one shop. All of Mesa, one shop. And they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Both Brian and Thelma, the Thompsons that own Thompson's Auto Repair, come from gas station families that date back to the 60s and the 70s in the Mesa area. Both of their families, their mothers worked on the books on the gas stations, and their dad ran the bays. Both of their dads and mothers. So these two young people know cars and know car repair, and I'm really proud to tell you that Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley, is the only shop in Mesa I can recommend, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have 5 lines, and they're all open. If you'd like to call in, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. But let me talk about, for a few minutes, about some of the very bad guys in our industry. They're few and far between, but you're going to recognize this. Let me explain what's going on first. In the old days, we got to see your car every 3,000 miles. We rotated your tires every other oil change, and we did your transmission services and all your fluids, your brake fluid, your power steering fluid, your transmission fluid, your engine oil every 3,000 miles. But the rest of the fluids were usually on a 30,000-mile call. Today, they're north of 100,000 miles, but you need to check your owner's manual. Well, the problem with that is now that we have these super synthetic fluids and lubricants, we don't need to change the transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. But there's still a whole bunch of people out there that are saying that we do. And you need to be aware of what your car says. So I'm going to give you some self-defense for car expense ways for you to do that. You can, the very first thing when you're told by a shop that you need something, you should look at them and say, I'm going to go get my owner's manual. Would you show me where it says that in the manual? And their response will tell you all you need to know. If they talk you out of going and getting in your manuals and they start giving you this big song and dance about Arizona is different and Phoenix is different and there's no other city like Phoenix in the United States and you have to do your car different in Phoenix and blah, 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 that's all bull. That's all bull. The fact of the matter is the lubricants we have today, put your hands together like you're praying and move them out about an inch. And that's the lubricant protection that we used to have. And then I want you to take your hands and move them all the way out as far as you can. Extend your arms out. And that's the protection of the lubricants that we have today. It's just different. But you see, what happens is we got to clip your wallet every time you came in for an oil change because we got to sell you this or that. Every other time, a tire rotation. Every third time, fourth time, we're going to change your transmission fluid. And we're going to service your battery. And we're going to replace your power steering pump. Now, you don't really have to do anything for 100,000 miles. So we make stuff up. People in our industry make up stuff. You need to have your valves flushed. You need to have this flushed, and you need to have that flushed. They're just flushing your wallet. That's all they're doing is flushing your wallet. And that's where you say, well, I'm going to go get my owner's manual. Can we dog-ear that page? They're not going to let you go out to your car and get the owner's manual. They're not going to participate in that because they can't find in your owner's manual where it says that you need to service that transmission at 30,000 miles. That's just all there is to it. And I'm talking about cars that are 10 years and older. or 10 years and newer. Let me say that, 10 years and newer. And then you say, well, you're due for a we need to flush your, and when they use the word flush, I'm just telling you right now, you need to just, we need to flush your valves. We need to flush your intake manifold. We need to flush this and we flush that. And this is what you say. Well, what symptoms do I have now that you're going to fix with this $250 injector flush? What symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix? You see, the person in front of you doesn't know anything about cars. They just go to training in the morning, and they're told what to say. They're not told how to answer those kinds of questions. But if your injectors needed to be flushed, you'd have an engine miss, you'd have a rough idle, and the injector flush would probably be the first thing the shop wants to do because the success rate's pretty good. But don't you understand? If you don't have a problem, then there is no solution that costs $200 or $300. So if you think that you're going to just flush your injectors and your car's going to love you more and the injectors are never going to fail, you live in la-la land. That's just not going to happen. We can change your oil every 5 miles or 500 miles, but when that motor decides to go to motor heaven at 168,000 miles, it's going to motor heaven. That's all there is to it. There's nothing you can do about it. 9 out of 10 motors that we replace are damaged because the customer drove it low on oil or kept driving it after it overheated. I mean, it's just almost every single one. So if you can avoid driving it when the needle is in the red and there's smoke coming from the hood and you're 7 miles from home and you go, I'm just going to go ahead and take it home, it'll be okay. It isn't going to be okay. You're going to end up having major motor work. Same way with your transmission. It's slipping like crazy. I have to give it a whole bunch of gas, and then all of a sudden it goes, and then it grabs, and then it shoots me forward. You can't do that all the way home. You can't do that. Call a tow truck. But the beginning of the end of your engine is oil consumption, blue smoke, and probably overheating. That's the beginning of the end, but not over. 9 out of 10 overheats are fixable. One is the symptom of something big. That's it. So I just want you to self-defense for car expense is something that we've coined, and it has everything to do with arming you with things to say. Now, here's your default. Ladies, this is one that really works well. My husband, you know, he doesn't know anything about cars, but his brother, and let's say you're driving a Chevrolet, his brother works for Chevrolet as an engineer. So I need you to just, I'll come and pick it up in an hour, but I need you to write down exactly what you told me, that the Scookulator valve had too much carbon on it, and that you were going to do this flush and that flush, and this would make the car last forever. I need you to write it all, whatever you told me, write it down, and I'm going to go ahead and give it to my husband's brother. There isn't anybody that's got a half a brain between their ears that's going to give you something in writing when they just try to float that trial balloon past your nose. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to write it. So tell me what it is I need again. I need you to write it down. Tell me why I need it, and tell me what it is, and then put a price to it, because I'm going to give it to my husband, and he's going to give it to his brother who's an engineer for Ford. Or who cares if you're fibbing? The fact of the matter is you're going to see a response that's going to, you're going to say to yourself, yeah, I knew this wasn't the case. And that's really what it's all about. Your owner's manual is the Bible written by the guy that built your, the man or the woman who built your car. It's the Bible. We're not allowed to change it just because we live in Arizona any more than the people in Minnesota can change it because they live in the cold country in the winter. It's just not right. That manual doesn't. And sometimes there is a time, I've seen it twice in my entire life, where they made manuals geographically. So there was a manual for something in Minnesota, and there was a manual for something somewhere else. But today, I haven't seen one of those in a very, very long time. Very long time. And you can imagine that if I say something and somebody has something that's going to make me eat my words, they'll produce it. And that's okay, because if that happens, I raise my hand. I'm okay with that. I learn. But our industry is suffering because you're only coming in once a year for an oil change instead of three and four times a year. Our industry is suffering because your car has fluids that we've never seen before and that last 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 times longer than the fluids we used to put in there. So that's what's going on, and we're scared we're all going to go broke, and we're scared. But in reality, my shop, we have 20 bays. We have 20 bays within what we call another 10 bays of what we call wet work. When we're going to do your water pump, we're going to do it over some floors with drains in them. And so we have those. We can position almost 40 cars. We got lots of work. There's no reason to panic. And my daughter and my son, they're not going to tell you you need something when you don't need it. That's all there is to it. So, but we don't have a crystal ball, so you can't say to us, well, okay, I know my oil changes are on 7,500 mile intervals, and so you've pronounced it okay, and so I should be okay for 7,500 miles. No, today it's okay. We have no idea if you're going to blow a tire or blow a fan belt or blow the radiator up in the next 1,000 miles. We don't know. But today, everything is good. So, I know we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Morning, Mark. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have a 2020 Cadillac, and then sometimes when I'm at a stop sign and I put on the brakes, it'll start squeaking.
Is this before you come to a stop?
Yes.
Okay. So you're coming.
And I think it's coming from the front.
Okay.
So it's got those Brembo brakes on it.
Okay. Okay, so you're coming up to a traffic light, and it really makes no difference if you're gently applying the brakes. On a 1 to 10 scale, if you're applying a 1 or you're applying a 10, it really doesn't make any difference. But there's a squealing noise, and is there a little bit of roughness in the brake pedal where the squealing noise and what your foot's saying, they match?
Okay. Exactly, yes.
All right, the squealing is the pad is moving. The pad is moving, and believe it or not, you know that there's two sides of a brake pad. There's the side that hits the rotor, which is the asbestos side, but the back side of the pad is metal, and it touches the back side of the fingers of the caliper. The squeal is coming from there. It's not coming from the pad. The pad is loose, and we make anti-rattle springs for those. So the pad is vibrating like a guitar string, and all we're going to do is we're going to... Actually, us old guys, we just take and put this bar underneath here, and we lift up here, and we take our hammer, and we go, and there's tabs on the pad that hold it to the caliper, and all we do is tighten those up, and with a hammer and a pry bar, we tighten them up, and we send you on your way. So it's the pad that's moving.
Is that a major concern or not?
No, not really, not really. And if you wanted to, do you work on your own car?
Not really.
Okay. This is how I would approach it. When you take your car into your garage, you say, I need a tire rotation, and would you tighten up those front brake pads for me just a little bit? They seem to be squealing. And if he understands that, he's a keeper. He's a keeper. Because
okay.
We all know how to tighten up the front brake pad. Well, and he says, well, what? Maybe the service writer goes, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, the pads themselves, they have these ears on them, and they clamp onto the caliper. And I guess when the pad kind of moves around a little bit, you get a squeal. And I guess the old gray-haired guys know how to just kind of clamp those tabs down a little tighter. Try it and see. What part of town do you live in?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've seen those little springs in there. I think I've, in my younger days, I actually changed out some brakes and... I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, another quick question. On my next set of tires, should I get run flats or the high-speed ones?
What kind of car do you have?
It's a Cadillac. It's a CT. It's a Windows V models.
Okay. Well, the high-speed ones still have an overall high-speed limit to them. And when they come, and if it's got a 140-mile-an-hour tire on it, and you blow that tire at 141 miles an hour, you're in for a ride that you're not going to survive. So I'm not a real fan, and I have hot rod cars that run those kinds of speeds. And, yes, I put 140-mile-an-hour tires on it, the V-rated, the VR-rated tires. Yes, I do that. I would probably – I mean – I'm not gonna tell you to do that, but I think I'd probably just go for quality in life as opposed to speed. I think most tires are going to be good for 93 to about 105 miles an hour, and until you get into those high speed tires, and then you're going to spend an arm and a leg for those. I mean, you can spend $500 a tire.
I'm definitely not going to drive that fast. But I mean, would you recommendation? I mean, would you even put the run flat tires instead of the high speed?
I don't like the run flat tires at all. They're really expensive. And how many flats have you had in your life?
You're right. I haven't.
And for me, honest to goodness, I've had two flats and both of them were my fault.
1 minute.
You know, that's all there is to it. They were my fault. I kissed a curb on one of them, and there was this piece of something in the roadway, and I just was kind of lazy about avoiding it, and I hit it, and it cut the tire. And if one of them would have been a run flat, I still would have been in trouble. So I think you just buy good tires that come with a good warranty, a good workmanship warranty, and that they're going to rotate your tires for you for free. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think I'd go to discount and I'd say on a 10 to 1 to 10 scale from a financial point of view, I'd like to buy a tire that's like a 6, just a little better than the average. And they give you tire rotations and all that other kind of stuff. So even though I sell tires, I tell people, and I told my mother up in Colorado, find a discount, Mom. Find a discount. So I got to run. But anyway, my email is mark@marksalem.com. My website is marksalem.com. But you can send me an email. And if you do, please send me a phone number so I can call you, because I'm going to have questions. And so that will help short circuit it. And I always just call from a blocked line. I'll see you next Saturday.